This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Kevin Breyerman. He's the vice president and publisher of Publishers Weekly, the venerable trade magazine that almost everyone in the book business knows about. How are you, Kevin?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. So I thought we could talk a little bit about, first, just to introduce yourself and maybe for people who don't know you, to know who you are and what your background is. What have you done in the past, and how'd you get to Publishers Weekly?
Well, it goes way, way back. I graduated with an accounting and finance degree, looking to get into accounting, and I did work for Dun & Bradstreet for many, many years in the international unit, being a financial analyst. And then I asked to be transferred overseas, and they said that'd be great. We look forward to you transferring overseas, but you have to wait your turn. So my turn came up a year later. And they basically says, you can go overseas now, and you're going to Chile. And I said, I don't think I'm going to Chile. I said, I really want to go to London. But they said, basically, Chile or no place. So I decided to look for a job, because I really wanted to get out of accounting and finance. Did not really want a desk job. So I just applied for a business manager for the Whitney Estate, which was owned by Walter Cronkite, and they had a stable of magazines. And he worked there for many, many years. And then when Connors bought Publishers Weekly, Library Journal, and School Library Journal from Xerox, my boss went over there, and he brought me over as the financial person. So that's how I got into the magazine business, and that's how I got into understanding about the book industry and Publishers Weekly and Library Journal and School Library Journal. And I worked my way up through the ranks as the financial person, but I always wanted to be the publisher of Publishers Weekly. It was kind of my dream job. And 5 years ago, the CEO decided that he would give me the opportunity to run Publishers Weekly, because I had a different way of thinking at the book publishing industry and looking at Publishers Weekly, knowing what its strengths and weaknesses were. And here I am 5 years later, working with George Sloak, who's the president and owner of Publishers Weekly, who was actually a colleague of mine 20 years ago. He was the publisher 20 years ago of Publishers Weekly. So it seems like we came back together to help drive PW into this new world of book publishing.
Well, so talk a little bit. Obviously, that I think is what I'm interested in talking about, is the new world of publishing. So, just in terms of how, let's talk about it from the perspective that Publishers Weekly gives you, since you do get to see the whole span, I think, and also with the Library Journal and other magazines, you're really covering the entire range of what publishing is about now. I think everyone knows that e-publishing is on the rise, but maybe you could talk a little bit about how you see that affecting the book business going forward. What's the landscape going to look like, over the next couple of years?
Well, I believe the book industry is actually going through a very exciting transformation from print to e-books. I believe that print books, print reading will always be there in some type of form. It all depends on how you want to read it, but I don't think print books are going away. I believe that e-books is a great entrance into a market, because as we develop our new technology and tablets and e-readers, it's becoming an important part of the industry. And right now it's between 10 and 15% of book sales from the major houses. Technology is changing the way we read, and people want to read in different formats. It all depends on how you want to read. Some people like to read on paper. Some people like to read from their Kindle or the Kobo or the Nook. Some people like to read on their iPad. So I believe that you need to provide content. It's all about content and what form a person wants to read it. If you look at the kids, they read on their mobile devices, and that's the only way they're reading right now. So you really got to find what is your audience and how they want their books being presented to them. And it's definitely changing the landscape. If you look at the traditional chain stores of Barnes & Noble or Borders, the first thing you walk into, you see is their e-readers. So it's a format that's easy accessible something that publishers need to reckon with.
So, well, when you say that, what publishers need to reckon with, let's get more specific. I'd separate it into two sets of questions. One would be existing publishers who have built-in overheads that have come about because of the print business, who have to try to figure out how they can succeed in the emerging digital world without taking, you know, without losing what they have in the print side. So for that category of publisher, the challenge is different from someone, let's say, who's either a startup or who is small enough not to have embedded, you know, kind of, they may outsource everything anyway, so outsourcing to print is not so different from outsourcing to digital once they make the leap. But for a larger publisher, not necessarily only the big seven, but everybody else who's, you know, fairly good size, I think they face a different challenge, and I want to kind of hear your perspective on how, what you've learned from talking to publishers, which I assume you do all the time. How are they coping with this the challenge of running two different businesses, essentially?
Well, if you talk about the big houses or even the large, medium size, they have the infrastructure, they have the cash to explore the opportunity of making a book more enhanced ebook format. They are looking for new skill sets, so they are involved in it in a big way. They seeing this as an opportunity for their authors, and they're going for it. They know that the tablets of e-readers are here to stay, and they know what their audiences are, how they want to read, and they are developing e-books, whether simultaneously with the print book or whether it's coming out first. But it's a format that they have the skill sets and the money to and the resources to put in and see where it's going to go. Today it's about e-books and enhanced books. Who knows what it will look like in 6 months from now or 9 months from now. The technology changes for them, but they have the infrastructure and the money to spend in it. Where you have the small or medium-sized publishers, the president could be the president could be the production person, the marketing manager, the circulation. I think they're a little bit nervous about it because their cash infusion into business is not huge. They're afraid of making mistakes. So one of the easiest way to do is to outsource it to providers and start understanding what they need to do for their ebook business and the transformation of their own business. So it's really about, you know, what resources do you have and how do you use those resources in a manner that doesn't financially strap you, because, you know, 9 months from now, there could be a new form of ebook coming out. Right now, there's probably 134 readers out there. If you went to the CES show last year, which is the Consumer Electronics Show, you know, everybody was coming out with their own form of tablets and what kind of devices they are. So there's new media that everybody is dabbling into, it, and I think the big houses have the structure and the money to play in the game, and mid-size and smalls do have some money, but they're outsourcing their services to other people because they're really confused about the marketplace and where it's going, and they really got to focus on their core business.
So do you think that is this something that you as a trade magazine covering the book business, do you feel like you have to broaden your horizon now and head off to shows like CES so you know what the devices are, or do you feel like that is not the core of your concern and more the content part?
No, I think you need to start looking at other shows. And this year there was two major shows, Digital Book World, which is for publishers to understand the digital space and where it's going. There's Tools of Change, which is more futuristic in terms of where the business is going. I believe CES, Consumer Electronics Show, is something that they should take a look at, but I don't think that's the main focus of publishing. There's South by Southwest, which is a show in Austin, which is about the future of media and transformation of media. So I think publishers, to gain knowledge, need to start venturing out and going to trade shows or go to Publishers Week. We do a lot of webcasts or seminars on the digital space and where it's going. So it's really the publishers learning from trade shows and going to other different types of shows to understand the meeting, and also it's reading, you know, trade magazines such as Publishers Weekly to understand the publishing industry and where it's going. Even PW as a trade magazine, we are transforming ourselves also, where we'll have a PW on our Apple app. PW is now on Kobo, Sony, e-readers, the Kindle and the Nook. People are downloading our subscriber, our magazine, to understand the industry. You know, PW's thought is we always will stay as a print magazine, but our website contains huge amounts of information. We reach over 400,000 people a month. And our five niche newsletters, PW Daily, Cooking the Books, Comics, Religion, and Children's, also explain what is going on in the industry. So for a trade magazine, we want to serve our readers and how they want to read Publishers Weekly in all different formats. But we also, as a magazine, are going through a transformation because the book industry is going through a transformation. And we
I think actually, right, you in a lot of ways, you're facing almost the same challenges that a traditional book publisher would face, and that is, as you just described, in fact, the question then is, does your business model change, and is that some, you know, in some way a precursor or a harbinger of how publishers may end up thinking about content and who pays, you know, like you have, traditionally you would have a subscriber base, and they
right.
and advertising, and you'd have, you know, if you have enough subscribers, then you have not only the revenue from them, but then the subscriber advertisers have a base that they can recognize and you can sell. But in the newer environment, the question is, do you get the same, you know, do people pay for print, or do they pay for a bundle? You know, the New York Times has recently changed their model from enabling web access to maybe making it more, taking more of it behind a paywall. And I think that's similar to what you have, which is paying subscribers get access to everything. Non-paying subscribers get access to a lot, but not as much as the payers.
Well, yeah, we're definitely looking to change our model in terms of how people read our content, because content is expensive and we are content. So, you know, I look at my audience as just not the print magazine. I look as my audience as, if you take the web, you take our newsletters, you take the print magazine, and we're on Scrib and some other devices. Our circulation is a lot bigger than just print. So when somebody asks me, what's your circulation or what is PW, I say, we're more bigger than just the print. You got to look at PW as spreading the word. So, and then we're looking at different models now. It's like the Wall Street Journal changed the model. Content is expensive to produce, and we're looking to find the right combination, what should we pay for and what's not being paid for, and not becoming very soon in the next couple of months in terms of what people see for free and what people not see for free.
And do you also, I mean, are you looking at, as you said, you have apps coming.
Right.
You're going to be, I mean, are you trying to do a version of PW that would be appropriate for, say, an iPad?
Yes. Well, actually, you can read PW on an iPad through a company called Exact Editions. But our app is going to be more intuitive coming forward. We're developing it with a company in India. That's just not a PDF of the magazine. It's going to be interactive. We're looking at using your camera and snapping on the ISBN number, and content will come up. So we're trying to be more intuitive in terms of what PW can offer our readers and how they want to read PW and how we can supply content. And another big thing we do is, you know, we license our reviews. We're the largest review medium in the world. We do 8,000 reviews. So it's how do you also use that content and turn it into other revenue streams. So, you know, we're basically looking at the magazine as a new venture, and how do we monetize it, and how do we serve our readership the way they want to be served.
No, I think you raise another interesting point there. Is the future of e-reading headed toward a broader array? You know, you mentioned Exact Editions. I'm familiar with them. I think I've interviewed one of their founders in this series. And, you know, what their presentation was originally designed for magazines. It works for books, but it's pretty much a page-for-page representation of the original. And you mentioned the possibility of a different kind of approach as well, which is the more interactive one, which uses the fact that you've got access to the web on your device. And
Right.
of course, that's more difficult. It's more time-consuming, more expensive. But and therefore, for publishers and for you, obviously, a gamble. It creates risk, but I think you're trying to make your content more like what's on the web. When you do that, kind of blurring the boundary between the containerized form of your information and the more open form of information that the web enables. That's sort of an interesting conundrum for publishers because, if you make your content too much like the web, then the question is why not just use the web?
Right.
So, or maybe the way it's going to end up is that the app or the interactive version that lives on an iPad can be almost like a portal to what resources you already have on the web.
Right. You're totally, yeah. I just think that, we're in a space now and we're trying to figure out, app, that was coming out in a couple of months, that's intuitive, it might totally be different from a year from now. We're not abandoning print. I think print is still something that people still want to read. We'll have more long, in-depth stories where the web is more for instantaneous news information that people want 24/7. What the print is going to do is give more in-depth stories about the industry and what is going on, so somebody can refer back to it. Still, PW has the reviews, and librarians and booksellers still love to pick up the printed version to read the reviews and see what's going on in the industry. There's so much information coming at you that sometimes people just want to sit back and refer to PW as more of a reference tool with stats and information where how many emails get pushed at you per day. You turn on the TV, and how many times you see different stories or the streaming ticker tape at the bottom of the line. So I think there's a lot of stuff going at you. And, people now are blogging and social media, which is, I think, is good, but you got so much information coming at you. What PW did is decisive what is good information and what's bad information. And being current on stories like Google, what's happening in the Google segment, what's happening in the digital space, that you want to sit and absorb. So.
Well, but do you really think that over time, I guess this is a question we'll find out. I mean, may not know the answer to, but it does seem that over time, people will say, well, I don't need the print version anymore because everything I want is going to be available in some way or another digitally. With books, I know there are lots of arguments for using them in different environments. There's sometimes I might be a pure digital reader, but I still might buy some books for certain occasions or because I really want the souvenir. But it's harder to make that argument for a magazine, especially you, because you're weekly. The theory is that your information contained in that weekly issue is current during that week, so it's less likely to be a souvenir. I understand what you mean about sometimes wanting to sit down and read not digitally, to have
Right.
the warmth and the kind of limitations of print, is a kind of relief sometimes from information overload. But in terms of your business model, the question is, are there enough people, enough companies, enough occasions when people will want that to enable you to print, magazines? Let's say cost efficiently, maybe not today, but maybe in a couple of years from now, you just don't know.
No, right. I don't know. I can't tell you, where PW will be in terms of print in 5 years, but for the next year or two, we are committed to the print because we still see it as an avenue. Our circulation's still 20,000 strong. We're venturing into other markets that will grow our circulation, whether it's the non-traditional market, whether it's the library market. PW still sees a resource, just like other magazines like Variety. Remember, we're a trade magazine, and sometimes, if you look at consumer magazines, they go in and out very quickly because it depends on newsstand distribution. We know who our core audience are. We know how to reach our core audience. we know exactly what they're looking for in terms of readership. But you know, you're right. You know, print magazines, will PW be around in 4 or 5 years? I hope so. I believe so, because the model that we're creating, it's the good going back and forth from print to electronic. And again, the librarians and booksellers mark up PW for the reviews and make comments and make notes in it. And I think when you get emails being pushed at you, or you know, you can really go to the website and use the website for a resource. You know, it all depends on how you use it. And you know, I can't give you a different answer with PWD in terms of the print side, but we still have a fair share of print advertising. In fact, print advertising this year over last year were up 5%. Electronic revenue was up 20%. We still see it as a very viable, important part of the industry.
So let's talk a little bit about the reviews, because I thought that was an interesting point. I mean, I think generally publishers feel that the former business model, where everyone understood all of the elements in marketing, PR, and sales, and how they worked. Whether you could make a book succeed or not, you at least understood what all the elements were, and you could really understand what you needed to do in terms of marketing a book. And of course, that's changed now. And one of the things that publishers and authors are acutely aware of is the decline in the number of reviews, in the number of newspapers, magazines, and other venues where books are written about in a serious way. And I think, you know, anybody who's reviewing books still, you know, right now has a really important role to play in terms of helping books be discovered by readers, and helping publishers and authors let readers know about their books. Is that something that you want to expand? Because, you know, clearly the number of books that are being published each year now has exploded. Digital kind of lowers the cost of entry significantly, and many companies are taking advantage of that. So we have a radical increase in the amount of book content that readers have to choose from, and that's a challenge that the review media can really help address.
Well, I always believe that reviews sell books, whether the reviews are good, bad, or indifferent. We do 8,000 reviews.
Is that 8,000 reviews a year?
Correct. We are the leading review. Yes, reviews in magazines and newspapers are declining significantly because they're not getting the advertising support from the publishing houses. Reviews, we will continue to do probably as long as financially we can do it, more reviews. We're looking at different categories to increase reviews. The industry looks at PW as a good housekeeping seal for reviews, and it's not like you go to other competitors who charge for reviews and only publish good reviews. And we publish reviews, and I believe that PW can make or break a book, especially if it's a star review. It's an automatic order for libraries to purchase that book. I still believe the size is a lot of the noise that goes out there between blogging and I believe social networking helps, but you know, when a blogger blocks, you don't know that person's credentials. Our credentials at PW are very highly standard. Now, we went into looking at self-publishing, and we have a new program called PW Select, where we're trying to help authors understand the space that they're in and give them the opportunity to be seen by our editors, and hopefully there's some people that we discover. We don't guarantee reviews in our PW Select program, but we take a look at it, and we do publish a certain amount of reviews that we feel that it's redeemable, but we don't change our standards there. Those reviews can come back good, bad, or indifferent, too. So I still believe that's one of the major strengths of PW is that you know, people look at PW for the reviews, and we always, every day we have a publishing house pitching us their books. So it tells you that, you know, that's our core business, and that's something that we will not, you know, give up along the lines that newspapers and other mediums have. So I don't know whether that answers your question or not.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, and the idea maybe is, you know, whether you'd increase reviews as a core element of what you do, just because they're, you know, that is something that's so important.
Well, yeah, we we look at different categories all the time. There's certain categories that we don't review traditionally. It's like crafts and hobbies, because it's more how-to. But we are now looking at that as an opportunity. We're looking at reference, since we have a strong library base of librarians reading publishers weekly. We're looking to increase some of the areas that we normally do, like reference titles or travel titles for reviews. So we are expanding in those areas as we expand our circulation, our readership. I just recently just hired Nancy Pearl, who's the Librarian of the Year, to write for PW to increase our readership in the library space. So we're looking at many, many avenues. We're looking now to launch an audiobook blog. We just had an audio meeting in the office of all the big houses, and they still see it as a growth area for them. So we're responding to the market in many, many ways that we can, and efficiently and as fast as we can do it.
So I guess if I put you on the spot and I said, if you could make a prediction for something that will happen within the next year that will be the surprise, what that might be the most disruptive thing that you can think, well, maybe it doesn't have to be disruptive, but, you know, what would be the thing that you think will come along in the next year that will really shake up and change the way any aspect of book publishing works?
Well, if you look at the retail change, you look at Borders in the midst of deciding, you know, what they should do with themselves, whether they're in bankruptcy and they're closing down stores. There was a meeting yesterday with the attorneys, and will there be a buyer, and who will be the buyer, and how does that change the landscape? Or does the stores that are remaining with Borders, are they going to go out of business? What is Barnes & Noble going to look like in 2 years from now, because they're committing a lot of their resources to the digital space? And what will happen to the large publishing houses? Who will be standing in 2 years from now? Rumors are that maybe one will merge with another one. Who will be in business in 2 years? I have no idea who will be in business in terms of book publishing.
But do you think that that's a direction we're headed, that, you know, there's consolidation, and then there's, you know, the possibility that some big entity may not be around anymore?
Right. I believe something's going to happen where, you know, and that's, or a publishing house will look now. They just launched, I think, Simon Schuster. I forgot the two, three major houses. They're going direct to consumers. I think it was Bookish they just launched the other day, and they supposedly put X amount of millions of dollars in to reach the consumer space. Will that work? I don't know. I think people are throwing a lot of money out now because everybody wants to reach consumers. And what will the landscape look in 2 years from now?
Well, and of course, you know, the question is, how does Amazon and Barnes & Noble feel about publishers going direct to consumer after all these years where essentially the retailers have had sole control of the consumer and publishers have not?
Well, that's true, because you look at years ago, or the last couple of years, the houses were trying to sell or going direct to consumer. It didn't work. Now they've put these three pieces together. Will it work? They compete against Amazon. That's a pretty big thing to compete against.
Yeah, you're competing against one of your biggest
right.
customers
right.
in a space which that customer really thinks of as his own. You know, if you're not successful, then nobody cares. If you are successful, then people, you know, are going to want, you know, so you may have, so you may be trying to disrupt a market yourself after you've already been disrupted, but the question's going to be whether all of the elements are, you know, in that chain are going to allow it to happen.
Right, and I also think it's a great time for bookstores, the independent bookstores. I think they can rise above the occasion with Borders not being in certain areas. If they can take some lessons from Borders and Barnes & Noble and become a community where people can come and go, because, you know, if a Borders gone out of business, local town, the next big, you know, bookstore or big chain could be 20, 30 miles away. I think it's an opportunity for booksellers to grow their business, because I hope that they learn their lesson from letting the big chains get in their business. And if you become a niche bookstore and really understand your community, I think you have a great opportunity to survive. And, you know, I believe there's a great opportunity for booksellers. So my prediction is that there's another opportunity for the independents to take advantage of the space. You know, they have the opportunity to sell e-books now through Google. So it all depends on how creative and smart an independent bookstore is.
Well, that's going to be a challenge. I mean, obviously, the concern I think they must have is that every day you read about the increase in digital or web-enabled buying by customers.
Right.
You know, that everyone is finding, you know, more and more people are going online. It's, you know, it's, I think it's has to do with the economy overall, but it also has to do with ubiquity of products and, or the ubiquity of access. And, of course, the other big challenge, I think, for everyone is the emerging mobile web, which, you know, this is a, you know, we've just, for a lot of publishers, I'd say they've just begun to wrestle with, you know, the new world of digital publishing, and now at the same time have to think about the fact that millions and millions of their customers are now experiencing almost everything online through their handsets, their phones.
Right.
And that's a completely different behavior pattern for the people that they're trying to reach. You know, things change really fast, and what we see is wave after wave of technologically driven change. I think it's that, to me, that's the biggest challenge for whether it's publishers or booksellers or authors or anyone in the ecosystem of publishing, is the rate of change.
Right. Well, you look at also at what happened in Japan with graphic novels and comics. You know, they have kiosks where people can download graphic novels or comics to their mobile phones. I agree. Mobile could be a huge way of looking at content and reading books or doing things on it. And, you know, there are so many of these businesses out there. It'd be very interesting to see who stands, who's, you know, at the end of the next couple of years in terms of, you know, these technology and digital companies are popping up left and right, and who will be around. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see some major people leaving some houses to start their own business in a digital space.
Well, now that might be interesting. I think I think more innovation and more entrepreneurship is needed. I think that's definitely going to drive innovation and change.
Right.
I mean, if some will succeed, some will fail. But I think, you know, you've got to experiment, take risks, and you know, make new businesses.
Well, right. If you look at the economy overall, I think, you know, people graduating schools, as college coming out, or other places, is that, you know, you've got to be an entrepreneur now. And because working for a big company has changed the landscape, and I think people are taking more and more risk. They don't want to abide by the old rules, and they want more freedom. And I think people with the digital space and not as closely to do business as much as it used to be, and it reaches further, whether it's domestic or internationally, I think people are going to take more risk and do things on their own. I think there's a huge appetite up here for risk and reward right now.
Well, I think that's a very, you know, important observation. I guess on that note, I'm going to thank you for participating in this call with me. I've been talking to Kevin Breyerman, who's the publisher of Publishers Weekly. This is David Wilk for Publishing Talks, a podcast about the book industry. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you very much for having me.